I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stupid fucking slut. If you can't handle the internet, fuck off, whore. Online misogyny is a global gender rights tragedy, and it is imperative that it ends.
It's exhausting. It's harmful, it's tiring, it's frustrating. I receive death threats on pretty much all social media platforms. Couple times a week.
It's not just Twitter that's sharing the love. I sometimes receive Facebook messages like this genuine one from earlier this year. Lady, you are a nasty, disgusting, despicable pig, and chances are that karma makes you suffer dearly for your unfairness. Better get that mammogram early.
Hey, Nat.
Hey, Mal. How's it going?
Good, I suppose, or as good as can be in the current circumstances. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah, enjoying more sunlight since the clocks have gone forward, so that's been good. I read your article the other day, and wow, it really hit me hard, talking about all of the sort of awful, uncomfortable issues that you've had to deal with working as a female journalist. How did it come about? How did you come about writing that?
That's a multifaceted answer, because I didn't know whether I wanted to write it. I didn't know how to write it. I just knew it was very important to do so. So I kind of had to bury my own feelings, my own insecurities about writing it, my own hang-ups, in terms of not flagging the fact that I'm female, not wanting to be the center of attention, all those things that you try to avoid as a journalist, because I knew that what I had to say was more significant than any of those personal feelings. On Thursday, the 11th of March, I was scrolling through Twitter in the evening, as I would usually do, but this experience was vastly different. Women around the country, and by extension around the globe, were sharing their daily struggles with feeling safe. The routines had become as normal as breathing to protect ourselves from men. There was story after story of sexual harassment, of verbal abuse, of every kind of unacceptable action we have to endure. Reading these accounts was triggering. As I sat there, things I'd buried so deep that I'd worked so hard to forget about bubbled to the surface. The majority of them surrounded my experiences as a woman working in football. My safety being routinely compromised, feeling like my body is public property, being fair game for social media morons that have wished rape on me. The most potent memories were from covering the 2016 League Cup final, where one man interrupted my pre-match video piece with a kiss on the cheek, laughing, "Have a bit of that." Post-match, another asked me if I'd like to see a firework and proceeded to whip out his penis and piss on himself. I laughed that off then. That's what I had to do, what we had to do. I didn't want to do that anymore, to quietly accept the unacceptable. The following morning, I spoke with my editor. I really didn't want to be the story, to become part of the national conversation, but I knew this wasn't about me. It was imperative to shine a spotlight on these experiences to force change. If figuring out whether I actually wanted to write the piece was daunting, pulling it together and then publishing it was overwhelming. Everything is out there then. You can't take it back. The reaction to the article, where floods of women broke their silence and responded with their own horrid experiences, made me realize we need to amplify these voices, to flag the extent of the unhelpful and often dangerous issues we face. So, hear us roar on this episode of Between the Lines, with Soccer Saturday's Bianca Westwood and a stream of personal stories from other female reporters and fans. No more silence, no more feeling like we don't belong in football. Bianca, I think the point we should start at is I watched your Vox Pop video that you shared, and the discomfort that you go through, I can actually tell by watching those scenes that you didn't know yourself how to deal with the situation. And I want to peel it back and start at the fact that Vox Pops are a very uncomfortable thing for a female to do, because firstly, you have to have your hair and makeup done for it. You have to look presentable for the camera. And oftentimes you're doing it in front of a group of men who sometimes misconstrue the fact that you're, you know, looking quite nice and they think it's for them, whereas it's for your job.
Yeah, absolutely. I never enjoyed doing Vox Pops right from the very beginning. I don't think many reporters do, especially in football, because you're going into an environment that's very tribal. There's alcohol involved. But as a woman, there is that different side to it. There is that, you know, sexual connotation, that sexual charge when men are together and they've all had a drink and they see what they perceive to be a pretty woman in front of them. And of course, yeah, they do take it to a different level. At that time, you know, I grew up going to football. I've got five brothers. I'm not a wallflower. I'm not shy or anything like that. And, you know, I can take a joke. I'm not easily offended, but there is a line. And even though it was sort of 10 years ago, that line shouldn't have been crossed even then. But what struck me, because I hadn't actually looked at that video for a long time, but I just remembered it when I read your piece. What struck me was that there wasn't one person there who, apart from my cameraman, who asked me if I was okay afterwards, who thought that that was wrong. They kind of, everyone laughed it off. And I didn't laugh. I pointed to the guy in his face and I said, no, do not touch me. But I was really kind of, my adrenaline was going, and I was actually quite upset by it, because I didn't know what he was planning to, I didn't know what he was trying to do at that stage. It was only when I looked back, I realised he was trying to lift me up onto his shoulders, but he was a stranger to me. And it really shook me up. And there were a lot of fans around that day. And there were a lot of fans who did cross the line a lot, you know, putting their arms around me, touching my hair, things like that, singing very crude songs, which I'd heard a million times before at football. But when it's thousands of men directing it just at you, it is really intimidating. And I did not enjoy that experience one bit. But when I got back to work, I didn't complain about it at all, because I wouldn't get picked to go on the next trip if I did. If I didn't want to do Vox Pops, I had complained about it before and said, I don't mind doing pre-match, but after the game, especially in a night game, I don't really like doing it. But it was like the intimation was basically, look, this is the job. If this is what you want to do, if you want to do the job, then that's, you know, you've got to do it. No complaints, just get on with it. And so I did.
Ha ha!
that was just a one moment caught on camera. That wasn't, that's not the only event that's happened to me like that. I've walked through crowds before, and fans have manhandled me, groped me, kind of sort of from nowhere, you know, like, so if you turn around, you can't see who it is. And things like that, I don't think they even think it through and or think that it might affect you in that way. But it is. It's the fact that I remember whenever it's happened to me and the fact that I can't do anything about it, because when you turn around and you don't know who it is, to put it bluntly, you want to give them a slap, but you don't know who it is. They've touched your body and they think it's a joke. And, you know, I've never sort of thought to myself, I'm not going to do this job because of that. I've always thought I'm going to carry on. I'm going to continue. I'm going to push back. I'm going to tell people as far as I can, you know, that my body is my property and not yours. And that's the way I've sort of carried on. But it got to a stage where even my own brothers wouldn't want me to go to football with them anymore, because they didn't like the way I was treated. If I walked into a pub with my brothers and the men started singing, you know, sorry to be crude, but get your tits out for the lads, they would be absolutely horrified and they'd try and laugh it off as much as kind of I had to back in the day. Now, A, they wouldn't sing that. B, now I would not put up with it. I would either walk out or I would tell them to stop. But at the time, it was a different world. It was just, you know, if you want to be a part of football, if you want to be in man's world, then, you know, you're going to have to put up with it. And I did for a really long time. But the culture is changing, fortunately, but it has taken a while.
Yeah, you say there about laughing it off. And when we say the culture is changing, I mean, there's still quite a bit that I actually feel very guilty about when I sit and think about, I hate this word, but the banter that I've been a part of and condoned or whatever. Because you want to fit in so badly, you already know that you're in the minority, you're a woman working in football, it's such a big distinguishing factor, you don't want it to stick out any more than it already does, so you sort of try and blend in as much as possible. And actually, that's not helpful, and I'm very happy that we are at a point where we now feel we can be more authoritative and not just accept the things that we have. Is there any other episodes that have happened to you? And even in terms of, you know, being denied opportunities and all that stuff that you'd like to reference?
I guess sort of starting out, I mean, that kind of confidence as well comes with age, because obviously I couldn't care less now what anyone thinks of me or whether I'm good at my job, what I look like, any of those things. But when you're starting out, especially when you're the only woman in a press room, it is quite intimidating. You know, you walk in, you can tell that other journalists, that especially the old sort of old fashioned hacks, they're like, what's she doing here? That kind of thing. And when I first started, there was only Natalie Perks, Jackie Oatley, Linda O'Brien in the Midlands. There was literally like three or four other women and on the whole circuit. So you always were on your own in that sense. I mean, there was someone, he's not at Sky anymore, but he was in senior management and he used to call me the Essex girl. And this is in front of the entire newsroom. And he used to call me on a regular basis. And not that there's anything wrong with Essex. I don't live far away from there. But I'm not from there. And B, it wasn't exactly used as like a term of endearment. It was, I found it degrading. You know, it was, he was kind of intimating that I was stupid. Maybe because of my accent, my voice. I'm from the East End, you know, but it really knocked my confidence. It made me really aware and self-conscious of the way I was speaking, but I didn't want to change it. You know, football's supposed to be a working class game at its core. I wanted to be myself, first of all, but I also wanted to be representative in that way, not just about being a woman, but about being someone who can come from any background and have a career without sort of having to have had some sort of privileged upbringing or anything like that. You know, I may talk like I do. I may have an Essex or an East London twang, whatever you want to call it, but I am educated. I've got a degree. I'm not stupid, but calling me the Essex girl really used to piss me off. But I didn't want to change it. I could have had elocution lessons. Lots of reporters and presenters have, but I just felt that representation really matters. And I wanted to represent my background. And that's why I didn't change it. But that was the kind of culture that existed in the game back then. But I really do, I have to stress that Sky are really trying to promote and foster diversity, not just in race and sex, but social mobility and all kinds of, you know, people with disabilities, you know, LGBTQ people, anyone and everyone has an opportunity now at Sky. And I think that is so important.
It is hugely, hugely important because we have to be representative. But the Essex Girl comment has made me think, did you have any sort of guidance or direction in terms of how you were dressing, how you were supposed to carry yourselves? Because that's another element that females deal with that our male counterparts just never have to worry about, you know, being told what they should or shouldn't wear and how to have their makeup done, how to have their hair, how to put themselves across on social media. Did you encounter any of those kind of things?
Yes. I mean, when I first started doing the match reporting, obviously, and as I explained, I was completely sort of shot. My confidence was gone. I didn't know, and I was being told quite regularly I wasn't very nice looking or whatever. My teeth, a few people had a thing about my teeth weren't good enough or whatever it was, I can't remember. But I was sort of taken to one side by a female member of staff, again, not there anymore. And she said, "Oh, Bianca, I think I need to tell you, you know, when it comes to makeup, darling, less is more." And I just thought, oh, you know, I didn't have a makeup artist doing my makeup. I was just kind of doing the best that I could to try to look good on screen. And I would get told constantly, no, don't do your hair like that. Have your hair, tie your hair back. No, you can't have your hair down. If it's windy, obviously I would tie it back. But I kind of, a few times I would say, well, are you telling Dickie this? You know, you're telling Dickie that his top's, you know, not nice enough or not, you know, he shouldn't be wearing that. Or, and of course, male presenters aren't told these things, but as a female, you do have to be more aware. But I just wanted to be myself. It was a really difficult time because I wanted to make the best of myself. So I probably was putting a bit too much makeup on. But it wasn't a helpful comment, if you know what I mean.
After speaking to Bianca, I phoned Natalie, our assistant producer on Between the Lines, to talk about all the things that were mentioned, to see how she felt about it as a fellow woman in football.
Wow, that was quite shocking to hear everything that Bianca sort of had to say there. I mean, it's empowering and important and that, Mel, but what do you think of all of that? I mean, just the instances in which she's been compromised and sort of had like her personal space invaded and that in the Vox Pop. It's so scary because you hear stories like this all the time, but it makes it all so real.
It does make it feel so real, and it actually reminds you of how much that being compromised is a daily battle when you're a woman in this industry. because it sort of colours every conversation and every action. You know, the banter you've got to deal with or got to be part of so you can feel like you're one of the boys. I often feel so guilty about the things I've said or been a part of in that respect in terms of the banter, because it's just encouraging a culture that's unhelpful to women. But because you don't want to stand out, and because you don't want to make it obvious that, you know, you're the odd one out, you go with it. And then in terms of your body being public property, it's not just with Vox Pops. It's every time you do a piece to camera, every time you're in studio, every time you're doing any bit of work that shows off your body or where you're on screen, so people are looking at you and they feel that they have ownership to comment on, to, if you are filming outside, to touch, to they're privy to your personal space. They're allowed it because you're seen as a public figure now. And, you know, your looks, having that constantly in the spotlight where people can say, and this is one of the things that always happen no matter what you're talking about. You could be going on about mental health issues or some really significant, important topics that we need to contend with, and you'll get comments like 10 out of 10 would smash. Oh, I definitely hit that. Annoying voice, but I would. Like, no matter what your content is, you get compromised and reduced to the point of your looks become everything that matter to a section.
Hi, this is Julia Stewart. I'm a presenter at Supersport International and a contributor to Premier League TV. While doing Vox Pops in a sold-out stadium, I was groped as soon as we went live, only to be told afterwards, this is part of the job, it's normal. Another incident involved a coach and pre-match interviews. I had to ask him, after a couple of uncomfortable minutes, to please keep his eyes on my face and to stop looking down my top. Again, the men around me said, that was expected. Pretty normal behavior. With all of the stories the last few weeks from women working in football, working in rugby, cricket, sports, all different sporting codes, and in all different locations, it has made me realize that our experiences, regardless of sporting code and regardless of location, our experiences are far too familiar.
How do you have the courage to go back into the same job every day, knowing that, I mean, the football industry and the sports media industry is massively sort of gender exclusive, male dominant, and I feel like sort of like your male counterparts and colleagues that you have at work don't have to deal with the same sort of like rules about what to wear to work or how to have their hair done in the morning or what sort of makeup to wear. You have sort of all of that, you know, they're just sort of like thrown into the job and they can come in looking however sort of thing, but you've really got to like dress it up and follow all these strict rules and then be faced with all of this criticism, both, you know, both through Vox Pops and interviews you're doing in person, and then when you go home and log in online and you have it all on social media as well. Like, how do you come into work every day and deal with that?
You have to have a really thick skin, and it's unfortunate that you have to, but you just do. You've got to sort of block off things. None of my male colleagues have ever been told, don't be distracting. Sometimes they're simple things, like when we have a Zoom scheduled for the early morning, my male colleagues can, you know, roll out of bed, uncombed hair, just sit there and no one cares what they're wearing, the state of their hair, or what their face looks like. Whereas I know I have got to be spot on. I've got to have my hair done. I've got to have makeup on. Because people will zone in on that with me. It will be decisive in terms of judging me, not anyone else. It's the same when you've got to go for an interview, or if you're doing a round table with players, like how you present yourself as a female is a thing. It has always been a thing, and I think it will always be a thing. You just have to get it right. And as Bianca and I were discussing, you never get it right. People will tell you too much makeup, too little makeup. You're looking too frumpy in those clothes. You're wearing too much. Ooh, you're wearing too little. There's too much leg showing. It's just very tiring. It's so exhausting. Mm. But like I said, unfortunately, it becomes such a part of the job and so much of what you deal with that you just become better equipped to handle it.
Absolutely. And yet off of the back of all of that, off of everything that goes on sort of within the workplace, you've got all of these harassers and abusers who seem to think that seeing you with makeup on or just a put together appearance means that they, you know, that it's almost just there for them, or that they can comment on it, or like supposedly compliment you. Like both you and Bianca were saying, they seem to think that you know, seeing you do these vox pops just because you're made up or you've brushed your hair, unlike other, you know, men doing it, they think they can come up to you and invade your personal space and throw you compliments as if that's going to make your day and make you smile or whatever, when realistically, as you've just said, it's almost just part of your job.
Hi, my name's Jo, and I've been watching football for more than 25 years now. I've experienced a lot of both verbal and physical abuse as a woman at football. Here are some of the main things that I've encountered. The worst one was probably leaving an away ground with another woman a few years back. Some men started trying to talk to us and quickly realised, even though we weren't wearing scarves or shirts, that we were away fans. They then started abusing us verbally, calling us brummy slags or bitches. We started walking quicker, as you do, and eventually started running, at which point they chased us. We were lucky enough to encounter a group of away fans and walked with them back to our cars, but it was very frightening. I've also been pressed up against by an obviously aroused male in the crush to get to the toilets at half time, and accidentally, on purpose, felt up both breasts and bottom whilst moving through the crowds in the concourse. When I turned to react, the group of men just laughed. They obviously knew what was going on. Most recently, I reported some racist comments to a steward, and as the men were escorted away, I was told in no uncertain terms I would get it the next match, you bitch. Fortunately for me, the club responded by seating security next to me at the next match. I'm very relieved that they took it seriously, even though the men did not reappear, thankfully. And that's just some of what I've experienced as a woman at the football, although it won't stop me going.
My name is Louise Borden, and I'm the senior video journalist for Stats Before News. I've worked in the industry for almost 10 years, and in that time I've been a video journalist for my entire career. I've worked at many major tournaments, at football grounds up and down the country and all over the world, and there are some experiences that really stick in my mind, where the behaviour towards me as a female journalist, I feel, maybe wouldn't have happened if I had been a male journalist. 2018, there were many instances in Russia where, as a female working in that country, I felt uncomfortable. One of the tasks I had to do was go and speak to fans after the games and get their reaction and get, you know, their opinion. I was at the stadium for the Poland-Senegal match, and Poland lost to Senegal 2-1. And as a result, a lot of the fans afterwards, a lot of the Polish fans weren't very happy. We were filming fans as they were coming out of the stadium, both fans from Senegal and the Polish fans. But on that occasion, as two gentlemen were coming out of the stadium, they felt it necessary to try and displace the camera from my hands, and they did that by throwing two punches. This was unexpected, and obviously, luckily, I managed to keep hold of the camera and I managed to dodge the punches. But again, another experience where within my role I was subjected to some physical aggression. The semi-final, Croatia against England, another landmark moment for me in my career, a World Cup semi-final, an amazing experience, although, again, tainted by some of the things that happened before and after the game. Before the game, I was required to do a piece to camera for our bulletin show, and as I did my piece to camera, I had several groups of men come up to me, two of which kissed me on the on the cheek, and then one actually groped my bum. So again, there were many other journalists out doing pieces to camera outside the Luzhniki Stadium, lots of which were male, obviously, but were not subjected to an encroachment in their personal space as I was that day. I was with a male colleague and we laughed about it and brushed it off, but I just remember thinking if that had been him and I'd have been behind the camera, the same thing wouldn't have happened.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over on Clash of the Titles, the gang are counting down to the Oscars with a special month of Best Picture clashes.
Rocky won the Oscar that year. Do you guys think it was a deserving winner that year, or do you think something else should have won?
I think Taxi Driver should have won.
I am with you, Vicky. My heart says Rocky. Rocky's one of my favourite films of all time. I don't like watching Taxi Driver, but it is. It is.
That's true.
It is amazing.
And that's so true. No one's ever like, oh, do you want a Bosch Taxi Driver?
Or if that doesn't tickle your fancy, and why wouldn't it, check out the Book Club on Football Ramble Presents, where former footballer Ricky Hill discusses the highs and lows of his storied career.
My schoolmaster came in afterwards and said, oh, you know, you've been invited, three of you have been invited for trials up at Luton. And I initially my thoughts were, where is Luton? I had no idea. and I said, well, I'm not going.
All that and a whole lot more. Sukarnov.
It was very difficult as a reporter. I would see my male counterparts getting their first, a lot earlier than me, their first live game, their first OB, being able to interview the, you know, the top names, doing press conferences and post-match interviews and things, where I was kind of like the fluffy, I was allowed to do those vox popsy features and, you know, the fun type, you know, interviews and things like that. I was never really considered a serious journalist in that sense, even though I always knew they didn't know more about football than I did. I knew that for a fact because I've been going since I was a child and football was in my blood. And it was kind of seeing everyone else progress a lot earlier than I did. It took me 10 years really before I was trusted to do those kinds of things. I saw male reporters able to foster relationships, friendships, connections with players and managers, whereas I didn't feel like I could do that because if I'm, you know, asking for numbers, it didn't feel right. Or they would then message me inappropriate things. That was the culture, whereas they'd like slide in my DMs and things like that. So that was really tough because I knew other reporters would have a whole host of contacts in their phone that they could call up and get an interview or a soundbite, but I felt like I couldn't do that. And if I did, I'd feel really uncomfortable asking for someone's number because I knew it would, not all the time, don't get me wrong, but a lot of the time it would go down a route that I obviously didn't want to go down.
This is something I don't think people realize, and I can completely understand you on that, because probably the biggest part of this job is networking. You need to be able to get information, and you get information by cultivating relationships. And it is very difficult to do that balance as a female. And I actually remember being in a mix zone and the guys were trying to get a player to stop and he just wouldn't. And they had perceived that I've got, you know, a good kind of relationship with this player, had interviewed him a lot before, and they said, why don't you just message him and please ask him to do this? We really need this. And I was like, I don't have his phone number. I don't have many players, if any players, phone number. And they were staggered. They couldn't understand how I'm doing the job I am and how I've gotten so many interviews and stuff without being able to text. And when I said it's not the same for me to ask for a number, it then I could see it, you know, hitting them why that would be the case. And I have to say that there have been instances, and I'm sure you will be able to relate, where players have chased up your number, whether it's from press offices or however they've managed to get it. And, you know, they want to be flirty. They want to say things to you that shouldn't be allowed because they think that you need them. So you have to put up with that behavior.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had players say to me, well, I'll do the interview, but only if we can go out for a drink afterwards, or I'll take you to lunch one day. And it's like, do you do this to Jeff Shreves? And I don't think so. So it does make life really uncomfortable. And there would be also another thing about having friendships with players or managers. And some are, if you can, some are genuine friendships. I hear rumours about myself or about some of my female colleagues, about them sleeping with this player or that player, which I knew to be completely untrue. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having relationships in sport with players or with managers, whatever that is. But it would be, you know, the assumption would be if you're friendly, close to a player, seen out with, had a drink with, been out clubbing with even, you must be sleeping with him.
Yes. And if you've managed to secure exclusives or breaking news or anything to that regard. It's only happened
exactly
because you're a woman and because you're having those sort of dalliances. It's a very unfair sort of thing, because on the one hand you can be boxed in, like you said, because of aesthetics, so they think, okay, you're just the face and we don't want you to do hard-hitting stuff. On the other side, when you do get any hard-hitting stuff, it's, she's only managed to do it because she's shagging someone.
Yep.
And this is not... This is a constant struggle. You don't get away from it. It doesn't matter whether you've been doing the job for 10 years, 12 years, 20 years. It doesn't matter how many managers you've interviewed, how much respect and how much good work you've put out. You will still have people undercutting you on the basis of being a female. You often compared to other women. It's never just, Bianca, I think you're as good as this male colleague, or I think you're as bad as this male colleague. You're always held up against other women. And like you said, when Michelle was introduced into Soccer Saturday, it was the whole, another female's coming in to do your job. We're constantly trained to be in competition with each other, which is a very unhelpful. When we do our jobs, we are so conscious that we have to be 10 out of 10. We have to get it right, because if we stumble, it's not just I'm making a mistake. It's, this is why women shouldn't be allowed in football.
That's exactly it, yeah. If I get something wrong in a report, it's because I'm a woman, not just because I'm a human being, and humans make mistakes. When a goal goes in, you can't see who it is.
I think one of the things that gives me such joy at the moment is how many women we have in so many different facets. I mean, written press is still completely lacking in that regard, but on TV, on radio, it's just a more inclusive place now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get a lot of young women writing to me, you know, saying how that I've sort of inspired them, and how they really enjoy watching me work, and they want to do the same things, and asking me about my pathway, which is probably completely different to how they will sort of succeed in their chosen sphere. But I do tend to look at it as well with a tiny hint of envy. I feel like, even though I've managed to do good things in my chosen field, I would like to have had the opportunity to do it now, where women are kind of more, you know, it's acceptable to see women around, and, you know, it's not quite such a novelty. You're taken far more seriously than I ever was when I first started. I kind of sometimes wistfully look at it and think, oh, you know, I see these women doing so well, and, you know, all power to them. And I'm so pleased and so happy. There's, you know, not a competitive bone in my body when it comes to that. I really enjoy seeing women broadcasting, reporting, writing, whatever it may be. And I just think sometimes, oh, if I started now, I wonder if I'd have been able to do more earlier, you know, because obviously I'm a lot older than a lot of the female journos coming through, and I've really enjoyed my career, but it would have been nice to have maybe given those opportunities a little bit earlier in my journey, especially on social media. I mean, fortunately, I think I'm too old now for any players, so that doesn't come into it. So it's quite a relief. I'm old enough to be his mum, so can we not go there?
Hi, my name is Alexis Nunez, and I'm a presenter, reporter at ESPN. And working as a woman in football comes with a lot of challenges, you know, challenges that have to be fought every single day. And for me, one of the most infuriating challenges is the expectation that we as women somehow are always attracted to every footballer and that we use some powers of seduction to advance in our careers. And I mean this in the sense that sometimes when I'm trying to get an interview, I've had my very own colleagues, people that I worked with in the past, people that I'm still working with now, tell me things that, you know, instead of messaging an agent or a club for access first, why don't I just slide in a player's DMs on Instagram because they'll notice more? Or I've been told to, you know, bat an eyelash and message a target first because I, as a woman, am more likely to smooth it over. And even this last week, I was conducting an interview over Instagram Live with a very well-known cricketer. And whenever we would laugh or smile or obviously looked like we were just having a good chat, so many of the comments coming in were saying, oh, she's flirting. Oh, she definitely wants him. I bet they're sleeping together. That's, you know, how she got it, instead of looking at it like, oh, well done. She was just able to get the best out of him in this chat. Because for some reason, still to so many people, women are good enough to be your mothers, raise your children, be your teachers, your doctors, your lawyers, but can still only be seen as some sort of eye candy or even bait in sports. And, you know, that's a challenge that is a constant struggle for me. And it's a challenge that I pray that we're able to overcome sooner than later.
People don't realize how much women have to work twice as hard within your industry, you know, just to get these contacts, like you were saying, and just to ensure that you're like communicating and going about things in the right way to avoid having like rumors and assumptions made about you sort of flirting with players or managers.
I've been married off to Sadio Mane based off a post-interview and award presentation picture. So yes, even when you're not asking for phone numbers, even when you're getting a picture for your company to show them that you've handed over the award and you've done the interview, you can be married off. So that's the kind of situation we're dealing with. And, you know, the Mane example, I still get people on my social media and stuff commenting about it. They believe it. Like, one person put it on a video, then it spread to blogs in West Africa, then it got picked up. In the UK, there was a tabloid editor who called me who wanted to run it in their entertainment pages that this relationship was real. And the only reason it didn't run is because I said I would very, very happily sue, because it's a complete fabrication. They've obviously got no information or no source. They're going off what these blogs and what a YouTube video surmised based off of a work picture.
I was convinced to go on Twitter when I started doing Take It Like a Fan with Fenners, which was a really fun show. And again, I was kind of the sidekick. I wasn't really like the main, Fenners was the main host or whatever, but I didn't mind that. It was like the hostess, that sort of type, but it was fun. I didn't mind doing it. It was good for my profile, and it was something a little bit different from Soccer Saturday, because at that point I still wasn't reporting, as like I was still just features reporting. My questions weren't used. I wasn't allowed to voice pieces at that point, really. So it was literally just the answers to my questions that you would see on the features. But yeah, that was just the way it was at that time. So, but then after Take It Like a Fan, I was then told that I was going to start match reporting. And my experience with social media up until that point was fine. It was all very sort of complimentary. But when I started doing the match reporting on Soccer Saturday, the first female to do so, blah, 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 I really wasn't prepared for the onslaught of abuse and vitriol that I received. I mean, I thought about this, like when I knew I was going to be speaking to you, and it kind of makes me really emotional, because at that time, I felt very, very alone. I wanted to do the job. I knew I could do the job. I knew football. What I hadn't done before was any broadcasting, no live reporting, anything like that. I'd done some post-match interviews and things, but it was a very new experience. And it's not like reading an autocue in a studio with your hair and makeup done. It's watching a football match. As any fan knows, you never know what's coming up next. You don't necessarily see everything. You know, there can be a scramble. You might not see the final touch. You might not know who scored. There's just so many variables to a football match, but that's what makes it so exciting. But when I first started doing it, I was completely unwelcome from viewers. I'd say probably 80% of viewers, female as well, told me I shouldn't be doing it. What was I doing there? I was ugly. I was old. I looked like a dog. Who had I shagged to get this role? Where had I appeared from? I wasn't as pretty or as good as this female presenter, that one. I'm just there to tick boxes. If I got a name wrong, well, it would be horrific. If I stuttered, I'd be called a moron. They said I didn't know anything about football, but it wasn't really that. I didn't know how to report at that time. They'd throw me in and I was petrified because I didn't want to get anything wrong. I knew the focus was going to be on me. And you do make mistakes. Merce gets names wrong. Cammy's got things wrong, but that's funny. When I did it, and I didn't do it a lot because I've looked back at my first reports and they weren't actually that bad. But when I did it, there was just so much anger from people. I really couldn't understand it. And so my anxiety was at an all-time high. I couldn't sleep before a match, which invariably made my performance worse. I didn't know how, my nerves were kind of shot to pieces and it was a vicious cycle because the more abuse I got, the worse I'd get. And I wasn't getting any support from anyone. It was like, well, come off Twitter then. And they took me off live reporting for a while, actually, but that was against my wishes, really, because I thought then, well, I'll never get better if I don't sort of continue. But there were genuine fans out there who did support me and who said I was doing a good job. And I believe I was doing a good job. I just wasn't completely relaxed. In a moment of desperation, I contacted Troy Townsend at Kick It Out because there was a guy on Twitter who was spearheading a real hate campaign. I mean, he had women, fathers of daughters, I could never understand, like, you know, encouraging them to message me and tell me how shit I was. And I said to Troy, I really can't take this anymore because I don't want to stop doing this job because I really believe that I can do it. But it's relentless with this guy, this who's created this account. And Troy, my savior, went to Twitter and got this guy banned. And then slowly but surely my confidence returned and I kind of got better and better at it. And it really annoyed me when fans used to say I didn't know about football because I did and I do. And it was just something that I was really, live reporting is such a skill. That, and at the time there was no replays. So if something happened and you missed it, you'd have to kind of get around it somehow. It is a skill that you have to learn and develop, and it takes time. And I think it did take me a little bit of time. And when Michelle came in, people would be messaging me saying, oh, she's after your job and stuff like that. What they didn't realise was I felt such a huge relief that I wasn't the only one anymore. I was so pleased when Michelle came in. And she's great. And she's got a different style to me, as Cammy has, as Johnny Phillips, as Dickie. We're all kind of different in our own way, but that's what makes Soccer Saturday, Soccer Saturday. And, as soon as she came in, I was like, you know, I'm here if you need anything. And I'm sure she went through her own things with social media. But now it's completely different. I'm seen as, you know, one of the better reporters on Soccer Saturday with a lot of people who respect me. But when I see new females coming on Soccer Saturday, whether it being on the panel or reporting, I see what they go through and I think, they used to say that about me. And now apparently I'm brilliant. Now apparently I'm the best one. But they said exactly the same to me. So just stick it out, carry on. And eventually when they're used to your face and used to your voice, they'll go away.
You said a few really interesting things there. And, you know, earlier on, you said you're not a wallflower, but no matter how strong you are, when you have people persistently attacking you and attacking you in the harshest of ways, not disagreeing with your opinion on something, but being quite personal and, you know, going for looks or attacking your knowledge base, it does affect you. It does impact you no matter how you try and switch it off. And it can be quite debilitating. Like you said there, it was affecting your sleep, which in turn was affecting your performance. And it always strikes me how when you do get hate and you click on the Twitter profile, because you mentioned it as well, it's a father of daughters. And you're thinking, what is going through your head? Do you want your daughters to be subjected to this from men when they grow up? It just absolutely boggles the mind.
I know. And really, I mean, I used to occasionally confront these people and say, you've got a daughter there. How would you feel if some random 50-year-old guy contacted your daughter and told her she was useless or ugly and they haven't really got anything to say about that? Then sometimes they'd apologize. Sometimes they'd just double down and be even more abusive. But I could never really understand that mindset. When you're raising females here, do you not want them to enjoy the same, you know, luxuries as you have in life? You know, the luxury of just being able to be, without someone sort of telling you you're useless or you're just there for sex. And as I say, they never really had a comeback from that. But, you know, now it's a lot different for me. I very rarely get abuse. And if I do, I really don't care. I really honestly don't care. And if I could instill that in every young girl, that it means nothing, I would. But unfortunately, you only get to that point after a barrage of abuse.
Yeah, no, I know completely what you're saying. I also don't care, but you have to learn to go through that process on your own. Yeah. And it's quite unfortunate that we have to teach ourselves how to have a thick skin. Without your journey, probably people like me don't have my journey. So thank you for being for being a trailblazer and for going through all that you went through and being strong and sticking with it, because it's not easy. As much as you love football and as much as you're passionate about it, when you are being sliced down so regularly, it is difficult to persevere, but you did it. And yes, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. And here's to us not just tolerating what we absolutely shouldn't anymore.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, I'm really happy to be saying all this for the next generation coming through, as you say. But the best thing about all this now is I'm not alone anymore. And people coming through, young women coming through, you know, they're going to have other women around them to champion them and to help them sort of grow and succeed in this business. Because it's not easy. It's still not going to be easy. But, you know, we've now got sort of a lot more people around and not more women around to help us, which will only make us stronger.
A long time ago, when there weren't very many women in the industry, a player came up to me in a mix zone, did the interview with me and no one else, and someone in the background went, "Bloody woman."
Hi, I'm Carrie Brown. I'm the chair of the Football Writers Association.
I went up to them and I screamed at them. What did you just say? Actually, the reason I got that is because the agent of that player had promised me an interview, couldn't fulfil it, and they said if you're in the mix zone on that day, he'll come and speak to you then. That journalist has become one of my greatest supporters. I went one day, it was a manager that wasn't very happy about me, very powerful manager. I was very upset. I called him, he said, right, when are you free? This is a guy in a very powerful job. He met me straight after work. We had dinner and drinks together. And he told me, if you're not unpopular every week, you are not doing your job right. Kind of moving into tunnel reporting job now, so it's a bit different. Try not to be unpopular. Can be sometimes. But yeah, challenged him. He has become my biggest advocate. And I remember watching him one day saying, do not mess with Carrie. She's terrifying. Keep going. Kick ass.
This is what I've always wanted to do. This is what I was born to do. This is what I've sacrificed so much to do. I've had to leave my family, my friends, my country, my comfort to move and to completely change my life in order to have what is my dream job. I am very good at it. I've worked supremely hard at it. And people within the industry respect me, give me opportunities, give me great feedback on stuff I've done. I've got managers who want to sit and talk tactics with me, who ask me my opinion on stuff sometimes, players who seek advice from me, agents who want their players to do stuff with me because I bring out their personalities and that human side so well. So those are the things that I hold on to. People that want to abuse, that want to undercut, that want to hurt, and that want to hate me, that's all their business. Yes, it's not nice to deal with. Yes, sometimes it can be very overbearing and it just makes you feel like, oh, what is the point? But I remember all the things that I've achieved. I remember how far I come. I think about how proud my family are of me, how proud my friends are of me. I think about all the great stuff I've managed to do. I mean, this job has taken me places I would have never ordinarily visited. It has given me a great life, and I don't want people listening in to think it's like, oh, this is the worst thing ever, being a female in football. It's not that. I love this game. I love my job. I'm so passionate about it. I love telling stories to the listeners, to readers, to painting pictures for them, to helping educate them. I just want, I suppose, some understanding of what we go through and help in changing it, in making it a better environment. Because, you know, your daughters, your sisters, the loved ones that you have in your life, the women, they might be going into other male-dominated fields, maybe not sport-related, but other ones. And you don't want them to feel these kind of things, so we can all work together to just make it a more inclusive, a more encouraging and a nicer space. I suppose that is the aim. And just for people to remember that I know a lot of times there are guys who think you do a really good job but don't say it or don't leave a review or, you know, don't provide feedback. And the ones who want to be loud, who want to be abusive, they are the ones that always want to leave an unkind review. So sometimes if you enjoy something, if you like something that you've read or if you've liked a podcast, or it does help to actually provide that positive feedback, because it does help shut off the noise of those who just want to scream.
This
was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.